Hi, I'm Rebecca Amzaleg. I am an actress based in Toronto, and I want to thank you so much for watching this episode.
Welcome back, everyone, to another incredible episode of Chat with Dan. For today, we have on the show, I mean, what can I say? You know, we already have her here before, the incredible, amazing, the badass, the superstar, the legendary, Rebecca. Rebecca, how are you today?
Okay. It's like, I never know what you're going to say to introduce me, but that's very nice. I'm great.
That's awesome. I mean, what better way to have an incredible morning than to be chatting with someone as incredible as you? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I gotta say, I agree.
There you go. Now, for those who are new to the channel, don't forget to leave a like, subscribe, follow. It helps a lot. Now, without further more, let's jump in. So, starting out, tell me, Rebecca, what's new? What you've been up to recently?
Well, as you know, there is a strike going on in the United States, which means that a lot of productions that are American that shoot in Canada are shut down. So I would say 60% of our productions are gone. I don't know the actual number. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely taken a toll. But, you know, like all for good things. If we had a contract that was up for negotiation, we'd be in the same boat.
Yep.
Let's hope that they pave the way for us. So, you know, I really support all my American fellows. But yeah, it's like everybody's experiencing this. It's not quite a drought here because we have Canadian productions. We have like other international productions. And I do know that more and more productions that are applying for permits through SAG, which is the American union, productions that are going to be indie or productions that are going to go on, that are Canadian productions with American actors. Like there's a lot of things that are trying to happen so that not all of Canada gets to be shut down because of these horrid corporations who are greedy as fuck.
Yeah.
That's what's new. Other than that, no, I mean, like, it's, I just did a wonderful indie movie in June with Reshna Varma directing, and John Ainsley was the DP. He's also a wonderful director. They're both wonderful writers as well. And we shot a movie. I shot it with Kim LaFerriere. We shot in Detroit and in, why can I never remember this city? Windsor, Ontario. And it was really, really a lot of fun. So that's what's new.
That's really cool. And you know, it's interesting how, for example, the other day I was chatting with some actors that live in Europe, and they were telling me that things there are totally different. You know, the things there are kind of normal, let's say. You know, they're like recording stuff, doing stuff there, and the whole like strike there. Yeah, they hear of them and they support it. But as I'm saying, things in Europe like are like different. So they don't kind of...
they don't have a union in Europe.
Yeah.
So imagine everything in Europe is non-union. You make nowhere near as much money. You have nowhere near the same rights. The rights you have are according to the government of the country you're in. But at the same time, film is not as, what is the word? I can't think of the word, but it's not, there's a different feeling around it. It's not so glorified, but it's not so, people aren't exploited in the same way. All of those things are still happening, but it's different, you know, and it's, I don't like, there's the art film, and then there's the, so all of independent, all of like series that are like really high end, and Europe has tons of those. But this, the kind of poof, the Marvel, the big budget things that around the world are, you know, seen as like, the big budget, you know, big revenue stream, the superheroes movies have over the entire world, but all of those things are American. Those aren't going to be made in Europe, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's very. But I'm curious to listen to that episode because it's so different.
Yeah. Now moving on here a little bit. So I got a couple of questions here for you. All right. Starting with the first one, can you share a particular film that inspired you to pursue acting as a career?
What inspired me to pursue acting was my brother doing a play when I was seven. That's really what my inspiration was. But film-wise, I don't think I understood that I wanted to do movies by watching movies. That was That's I wasn't like able to put two and two together for a long time. Like when I was a kid, I loved Dragon Ball Z, so I watched like cartoons,
Okay.
and like that's all I cared about. And but I remember, you know, my favorite movie that wasn't a cartoon as a kid was I think it's called A Little Princess or My Little Princess, and it was this wonderful, whatever, story where this little girl's father loses his memory and forgets to go to an orphanage, whatever. Anyway, it was just a wonderful film, and it was so full, and this little girl, this little actress, was so good. So
No.
that had a big impact on me. And also, I remember this was later on. I was probably like 11. I really wanted to watch Clueless. Like, I really was like, "What is this? This is so fun." But at no point when I was a kid did I think, like, I always wanted to be an actor, but I didn't. It wasn't because of. I wasn't like, oh, I want to be in that movie, which is really funny. I've never thought about that. It was more, I want to do the thing that is acting. I want to do the thing that is playing and performing. And by no means have I ever been a theater person. Like, let's be clear. I, you know, transitioned over to film and TV
Yeah.
right away. There was, I don't know what the math was in my head at the time, but yeah, I'd say Clueless had a big impact.
That's pretty cool. Now, was there any particular actor's performance in a film that you found inspirational somehow?
So there's been a lot, of course, and some of the people I've thought were really special and really good, like, have spanned so many different genres. Like, you know, I loved The OC, I love Vampire Diaries, like, I love all these, you know, trashier shows. And then, you know, my favorite movies are of the last while are like Tar and Phantom Thread, and I love Carey Mulligan and anything she does, and like The Dig, she was so good in that. And so these performances are so thrilling. They're so thrilling. So it's really interesting. It's like none of the I don't know if I was particularly inspired by anything. I do know that when I watch Kramer versus Kramer, and I mean, like, I'm me and everybody else, Meryl Streep was so exciting in that part. She was so great. But I also love comic roles, you know, and I love watching these not necessarily comedies, but like these women be funny. Like Meg Ryan was fucking hilarious in a lot of the shit she did when we were young. And I really, really loved that. And I was just like, oh, this is amazing. This person is funny and compelling and unapologetic. The unapologetic. Oh yeah, there is one performance. Have you watched Goliath, the show? It's with Billy
I
Bob Thornton. He's a lawyer. I think it's Amazon.
no. No,
Okay, well,
no, no, no,
I feel like you must, first and foremost. So there's an actress named Nina Arianda, who is in it, and she is really quite jarring and quite like insufferable. But I saw her, and this was, I mean, probably 2016, 2017, the show came out. And I was so taken aback because she was so shrill and annoying, but also like very attractive. And but she shocked me. I was shocked because I was like, you're so, it's beyond unlikable. It's like such a real person, but it fits so well in the TV format, or in the, you know, episodic format. It was amazing. And like she truly threw me. Like I've not reached that place in my own work, and it's a great thing to aspire to. But like, yeah, that was a very inspiring performance.
And now you get me thinking. Back when I was little, I think I also watched mostly cartoons, not like shows or films. Now that I
Yeah,
think
like
of it.
Sailor
Yeah, Dragon Ball,
Moon.
I think. I mean, Dragon Ball was like my thing. I remember back then when I was little, my father will gather my brother and I basically every day around 8 p.m. He will gather us to the living room, and we will watch Dragon Ball Z. Now that I remember, the episodes were like what, like 20 minutes, but because of the commercials on TV, it lasted like 45, even like an hour sometimes, you know, depending on that. But that were like really good times, and like every now and then when I watch it, is like, you know, it's like more nostalgia than
Yeah,
anything, you know. But
big
it's
time.
you know but it but it's like those shows were like totally different as the ones that we have now. The other day I was I was in my uncle's house, and my little cousins were watching TV, and they were watching like the Avengers and things like that, which they're pretty cool too. But I was just like wondering, like, I didn't have that back when I was little, and my childhood was like totally different. So yeah, I think my first film was actually my first film, like, fun enough, my first actual film was was Saving Private Ryan, now that I remember.
Wow, that's dark.
And I didn't, and because I was a kid, it shocked me, and I didn't understand most things until, later on, which I was like, oh, okay, gotcha. But that was like my first film I remember, and it was like the most shocking, scary, thrilling experience. And I watched it on the cinema, I remember. And after that, I fell in love with the whole soundtrack and the effects and explosions and things like that. I loved it. I was like, that's pretty cool. And
Yeah.
yeah, but that was like my first film, now that I remember.
I'm trying to think of like, because I again, like, I was all about cartoons and Disney cartoons, but Beetlejuice
Oh yeah, that was a good one.
jarred me into awakened state. Like, Catherine O'Hara was so good in it. And, but I mean, Michael Keaton and Geena Davis, and like, I just, it terrified me, but I loved it. So I would watch it and I would have to close my eyes, like, for all the scary parts. But I was just so into that movie. It was so compelling, and it was so that's the kind of comedy, like, those are the comedic roles in a non-comedy. But it's like, there's like, and Winona Ryder was great, but it just really, Geena Davis and Catherine O'Hara, they really just startled me, you know. It's I was taken back. I didn't, and it wasn't because I didn't have this concept of like, oh, I didn't know women could do that. I had no fucking idea about anything. I was just watching, I was receiving, and I'm grateful I've kept that ability. Like, I can just watch. I'm not like about performance or whatever. I'm just like a really good audience member. But it's funny because, like you, when you're, I think as kids, when we love cartoons the way we did, and I mean, I had all of the books too, the Dragon Ball Z books and Dragon Ball books. For a movie, which is such a different medium to be so interesting and so captivating, when really we're so used to cartoons, just shows the quality of the other thing, because it like makes you go towards, you know.
Yeah, for example, with the film that I told you, the Saving Private Ryan, instantly after that I got interested so much into the whole war, into the whole World War II history. And yeah, like, got me like super into that. And I remember also with Beetlejuice, me and another friend of mine, we'll be constantly saying Beetlejuice in school, so Beetlejuice would appear and actually could do something with our teacher. Never happened, of course, but we were like super, like, every now and then saying like, please come, like, especially like on tests, or like homework, things like that, But it's so cool, like those, like those type of films, like the type of memories they can share to you. And also, like, yeah, like those type of films also, the old ones, they have like a really good effects on it, that could really compete with movies right now, you know what I mean?
Well, they were creative with different technologies. It's like you can make things like the way the snake was, like they created a world. This is the thing. It's like, it's the Tim Burton way. It's like you create a world where everything becomes believable. Like, I don't have
Totally.
to, it doesn't have to be the best, you know, staircase railing snake in the world, but it matches. So I'm not shocked. It's the world I understand. It's like, I think that there's something so beautiful about not necessarily it being the best effect, but it matching the world we're watching, and that everybody's in the same movie. Like, Beetlejuice was amazing because even though it was like two worlds, everyone was in the same film. Anyway, I just am a big fan.
Now, are there any films that got you into take up a new technique or method in acting specifically?
It's interesting. There are certain performances that will, okay, so what's her name? Hold on, let me look up her name. Somebody who's had a surprising effect, I think, on everyone, is Annie Murphy in Schitt's Creek. She's a young Canadian actor, and her way of making a satire, or like a bit of a stereotype of certain women, is so good. and so special that I believe that she established a new archetype of character. And it's funny because, like, we've had this archetype of character, like, in a lot of different women, like Clueless is another example, like the Alicia Silverstone, like this kind of like spoiled rich kid. But the way in which she related to other people, her tics, her mannerisms that were all created for the character, obviously, because if you see her in another show, it's very different. But she like created an archetype. And so I've found that I found myself sometimes mimicking. And I was like, oh, that's the first time I've noticed a mimicking of a character or of an actor's choices. But again, like that other thing I was talking about in Goliath, the thing with Nina Arianda is that she was so free and so off-putting. Like, it's not that she was shrill in her voice, but her character was shrill. She was unapologetic, and it's not that necessarily you get a script and it says be unapologetic, don't think about what other people think. Like, that doesn't exist. It's in the sense of it doesn't produce that performance. That was her. So sometimes when I see performances like that where someone is so, yeah, just such a real kind of organic, like divinely inspired version of a person. It gives me encouragement to continue to be free and continue to follow my instincts. So I don't know if it's a different type of acting or a different approach, because also when you see a finished product, you're not like, ah, what went into that? You don't know how somebody treats a part. But there is another, what's her name? Olivia Colman. Do you know from The Favorite? And she was also in that show with David Tennant forever. I never remember the show's name. You know her for sure. She's won, Academy Awards. She's in The Lost Daughter. She's in The Lobster. Have you seen any of these movies?
I think I did saw one of them, but
Did you watch this season of The Bear?
No, I didn't watch it. No, I'm
You
confusing it
watched
with
The
another one.
Crown or
Yeah,
Fleabag?
The Crown. I did watch it with my mom.
Okay.
So,
Have you watched all the seasons?
yes,
Okay,
we
so
did.
she's the one of not the old queen, not the white-haired queen, but the one right before. Like the she still has brown hair.
Oh
Anyway,
yeah,
she's an actor. And anytime I see her in interview, and even when she like accepts awards, she's just so playful, relaxed, humble, and just doesn't make a big deal out of anything. And I was just like, oh, I feel like she might take that approach to her work as well. And that's also nice to not make anything so much of a big deal. It's really fun. It's really fun to be in that energy, even if I'm just watching it on my phone or on TV.
Interesting. Yeah, okay. Now, what about, check this out. So, is there any either film or performance that impacted your philosophy of acting or helped shape your style of performance?
Beyond what I kind of already talked about, like, so okay, did you see Tar with Cate Blanchett?
Yes.
Okay, so I've listened to a lot of interviews about how she took on that process and how she learned German, how she learned conducting, how she like, just also she was able to do all this, and the part was written for her. And so there's a lot that goes into this. But there's such a luxury in like having that time to dedicate to what that character knows well. And it's not an obligation, it's a delight. So it's kind of like, oh, I hope to be able to learn skills in that way, to be able to, bring more to that character. But so, and also Todd Field and Cate Blanchett are going to make the best movie ever. We're not surprised, but it was so beautiful. And what came out of it and her dedication and her, like I keep wanting to say masculinity, and she does refer to herself as her daughter's dad, which is very funny. But like just the entire character, how well shaped it was, it just really made me yearn to have the opportunity to have that much prep time and to have that much prep dedication. Like I don't know what people know, but we get parts usually a couple weeks before, if we're lucky, a couple months before. We audition for parts constantly. So, you have an audition, it's due in 2 days. If you're lucky, it's due in four. So you can only put so much in. And the audition, you're not supposed to do all of that prep work. You're supposed to just come in with an idea, and if you fit, you fit, whatever the decider is and the magic is. But to actually be able to prep for a role is so special and beautiful and exciting. And so the dream is to be able to really, really dig into that level and also discover, okay, well, I don't have, 2 years of a pandemic to prep for a movie, but like
Yeah.
maybe what does it look like? What does my prep look like? And there's, we've talked about Larry Moss before, with you, but he has these 50 questions to prepare, which are really helpful. But this learning of a skill and how deep that went was really inspiring to me. I don't know if it's going to change the way I approach things because, like, time is a constraint, I also have a side job to earn money while we're on strike,
Yeah,
and
totally.
there's so many aspects, but it's really the dream. I'm doing a movie coming up soon, that's written and directed by John Ainsley, and I've been lucky enough to see the script for a long time. And to be able to think about and prepare this character, this one is more of a horror gore comedy. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm so excited to do it, but that's a different kind of preparation. But there's something so nice about really just spending the time. This is the idea, to dream as the character, to think as the character. When you get enough time to do that, it's really special.
So basically, it's like getting into the whole mindset, right, of the character, let's say.
Well, and without, like, I'm not a method actor, and I have no desire to be, but there's always an overlap between me and the character, and it's like I find that overlap and I encourage it. And then the imagination is so fucking wonderful. Like I can just fantasize, dream as the character, and then I get so much information. And yeah, I mean, other actors might relate to this, but when you do an audition, the next day, if you still have it in your mind, you're like, oh, I now know this about the character. I now know this about the audition. Because things come to us. You know what I mean? Like with anything you're trying to figure out, things will come to you. Anyway, so it's like having time for things to come to you from inside of you as opposed to trying to, like, force it.
Yeah. And tell me how you handle like the whole pressure and expectations when you're about to perform.
So if I've been cast in something, the pressure is kind of off. I feel like the pressure of being liked or being chosen is gone, and that pressure is the kind of pressure that hinders me. The pressure of doing something, I feel like that's more encouraging. I feel like we're a team, and let's not let the team down. But it's not a negative. It's really, I love it, so it's fun. If I don't feel like I have enough time to prepare, I feel terrible, but I usually make sure I do so that I show up as prepared as I can be. Like day one of a project, you're only as prepared as somebody who hasn't started doing the thing. It's like it's interesting how much, very often, for example, if the project is whatever, 10 days, around day seven, eight, or nine, you're like, oh my God, I now know this. And the day one stuff I didn't know, but usually it cuts together. Yeah, I don't there's been so where I struggle more is if I am on set and for some reason I'm not doing what I expect of myself. I'm not showing up in the way I would like myself to. I know something's not working. And if it's not on me, it's not on me, but sometimes it can be partially on me and I'll feel quite terrible. I did a movie last year. I think it was last year. And the first day we shot, it was not gelling. We were not gelling. It was not going well. It was a really hard, like, setup. We're doing one shot. It was moving around. There was children involved. There was a lot of movement, a lot of sequencing, and it was we just weren't nailing it. And so luckily, but I beat the shit out of myself for it. I felt so terrible. I was like, they're gonna fire me. They're gonna replace me. Anyway, by the end that I when I came back to do other scenes, they're like, we're gonna do some pickups on the first day. I was like, amazing. And I was able to, bring what I knew I could bring, what I brought in the audition. But that was really hard. It was really hard to not do well. It's really,
And
tough.
how you continue to challenge yourself as an actor.
I love coaches. I think last time we talked about Doug Nyback, but I've just started working with this other British coach as well, named Joe Layton. He's a lovely actor. And I get a lot out of coaching because I want Doug Nyback is great because not only do we coach on auditions, but I'll be like, give me your feedback of the last things I've done. What do you think I'm missing? Where am I lacking? So it's like it's being open to coaching is really useful for me. I don't think I have it all together. But I don't do classes anymore because I'm such a sucker for validation that if I do classes, I'm just going to want to be the teacher's favorite, and that doesn't serve me. But I do a lot of improv, and improv helps so much. So improv and coaching have been the ways I've challenged myself as an actor in the past little bit.
That's really cool. Now, what do you think it's the biggest misconception that people have about actors?
Oh, that we're good at lying? I mean,
Mm.
everyone's good at fucking lying. Like, have you, everybody's lied. It's like, I'm
Totally.
not any better at lying. If anything, I'm really good at telling the truth. That's what I'm killer at. And so I don't, there's sometimes a certain type of person will be like, well, yeah, why do, how do I know if you're not lying? I was like, because you trust me or not, I know anybody's not lying or stealing from you. Another thing that I don't know if it's a misconception, but it's a generalization. That actors are capricious, there's all kinds of, you're like, yeah, that's one. I believe that,
No,
but there's
yeah, I've
also
heard of one. I heard of that
people.
one.
Yeah. But it's something I've, projected onto myself and been fighting against, but like, I'm not capricious. And so, and also there's tons of people and tons of different work that are capricious, and it's about your personality. It's not about your the profession you choose. The actors who make it usually have really strong discipline, have really varied interests and sources of inspiration and sources of support and sources of like financial income. Whether they're doing other, acting adjacent things like teaching or doing voice work or doing looping or whatever, it's not like it's the you have to you've got to be willing to be poor and to be rejected all the time. And like that's not really capricious to begin with, like yes, maybe a starlet will be capricious, but like that's the large majority of us are not starlets,
The other day someone asked me that question actually, because I mentioned that I was that I had this podcast, and someone asked me like, who has been the most capricious to you? And I was just like wondering, like, none. And I mean it, none of them. I mean, out of the 400 something actors that I've interviewed so far, none of them has been like capricious or giving me like attitude to be, like that type of attitude. None of them. I mean, most of them are pretty cool, and they manage to difference between their acting life and their personal life. And I get it, because another misconception the other day someone told me is the fact that because they're actors, then they should be feeling good on public speaking, or like things like that, which that's
A
also
lot of
not
actors are
true.
really shy,
I've met like a lot of them that they are that on their films or on their projects, they're like a totally different person, and when they're like normal, it's like totally different things, and you're like, oh, okay,
100%.
gotcha, So
No,
that's pretty
you're
cool.
totally right, and it's It's so funny how we have prejudices about all jobs. I'm like, I'm always suspicious of real estate agents, and I'm always like, dismissive of lawyers. And I'm always like, oh, if they're a nurse, they're gonna be cool. Like I'm like, why do I think that? Like, so it's about everybody's an individual, and generalizations like only take us so far. So yeah.
Yeah,
Are
that's
we
true.
more emotional? Probably, because we are taught constantly to stay in touch with our emotions. So it's like a tap. You can turn it off and on, but like we have a capacity to emotion. Doesn't mean we have a capacity to self-awareness. Doesn't mean we have a capacity to true empathy. Are actors often self-centered? The job kind of requires you to be a little bit self-centered because you've got to, you're your own instrument. So that I would say is like maybe a generalization that could be true, but self-centered doesn't necessarily mean self-interested, doesn't mean unkind, doesn't mean selfish, but it's interesting.
Yeah, there's like a plenty of them, and also the one that you mentioned that if you were lying, 2 weeks ago I had an interview with an actress, and she was telling I asked her this question, and she was telling me that back then she was into dating, and then she met a guy who in the middle of the whole date was telling her that what if at some point, like, what if this whole time she has been lying to, and she was like, well, that would be like a huge waste of my time, don't you think? The fact that we were like being together and then at some point be telling you like, hi, I got you, I was just trying
Pretending to
something,
be someone else so
and
we
then
couldn't have a relationship, like
yeah, like that was like a really crazy thing, and I was like, huh, interesting, because I've heard that like I've heard that question before. And it makes me wonder, like, why would someone would be thinking that? I mean, as you mentioned, everyone lie, so I don't get it why they would be, saying that.
I mean, I understand the theory, like, because they're like, oh, you can pretend to be somebody else. It's like, yeah, but who wants to do that? I do it for work. Like it's an art, not performing art right now. And it's just, if anything, and this is something I've learned, is like when someone doesn't trust, like if I don't trust you, it's not about you, it's about me. It's about me not being trusting, It's like if that person is doubtful or suspicious, it's about, their experiences and whatever.
That's true. That's true. But now that you mentioned also the it's like every profession has their thing. So, that's kind of inevitable to happen. Now let me ask you this this next question. Check it out. So if your life were a sitcom, right, what would be the title of it? But also, who would play the fictional version of yourself?
And so there's different versions, right? Like Aubrey Plaza could play me, and
Okay.
that would be pretty funny, but she's a little darker than I am. I'm trying to think of other. So it would be, it's a sitcom, so it's a comedy. And we need someone. This is a hard one. Okay. We could call this sitcom. Let's start again from the top, because it's just a
Okay.
fun one. And actor-wise, who would play me?
Who will we cast?
Trying to think of who's good at comedy. I mean, I feel like no, they have to really be. This is hard. It's like, 'cause I also have to find somebody who's the right age. And someone who's not quite like I'm a bit goofy. I think I'm gonna have to think harder on this.
All
I
right.
can't give you an answer, but I'm gonna give you an answer when it's not useful, when it's after we've finished
No,
the
yeah,
movie.
and I totally understand. That's fine. So we will
Okay,
leave it on.
what do you think?
Huh?
Who would you cast?
For you?
Yeah. Haha.
Okay. Let me just get the name. I think I know someone.
Okay.
What's the name? Okay, so let me just Google real quick here. I think an actress who could actually do that. and has been known for do a lot of stuff, but like a lot of stuff, and at the same time being able to portray many, you know, like she can be someone on her 20s, 30s, 40, you know, like has like all this. So check this out. I would say, and it should be interesting to see her on a sitcom. I would go for Kate Blanchett.
But she, yeah, but she would never play this.
I will go for that one. I mean, I
There,
know, but who knows? That would be
there,
cool.
yeah. The, you know, did you see Elizabeth Olsen do Love and Death, that show? Did you watch that?
Yeah, on HBO, right? Something like that.
So I don't remember,
I
but it's
think it
really good.
was.
It's
Yeah.
her, like, she's so good in that. I think she could do a decent job at it. If it's a comedy though, and we're doing a comedy, a sitcom of my life, I still think maybe, and I might be wrong, but I think Aubrey Plaza could be the funniest version. She's just such a great comedic actress, and she can play goofy and cool. That's what I am. Anyway, but yeah, sure. If Cate Blanchett wants to play me in a, you know,
You know, let's go big, you know, go
a
big,
Phoebe
go home.
Waller-Bridge, whatever, like,
Go
by all
for it.
means,
Yeah.
down.
I mean, if, yeah, let's go. That would be cool.
Or you know who else? I just watched this Western series. What's her? Emily Blunt. Emily Blunt might do a really good job.
Yeah,
She's really good.
okay.
Yeah.
I'll see that happening. Plus, she has done about like a bunch of comedies, you know?
Yeah, she's really funny, and she's also like, she can be dumb. You got to be able to be silly and dumb to play me, you know?
I like that.
All
That
right,
sounds.
Emily Blunt, she gets my vote.
We'll go for Emily Blunt then. That sounds like a plan. That would be cool.
Long
Now,
enough.
yeah, I like it. I like it. I will be definitely watching that for sure. That would be interesting. Absolutely. Now, if you could give one word to describe the feeling you have when you step on stage or in front of the camera.
Yeah, I guess full is the only word that really in one word will qualify it.
Cool.
Yeah, full, but it's like really being in the right place, like really just you know, in flow, you know.
Yeah, like you just feel it, like you just feel you're on the right place right now, that you it's like home basically, but like a different feeling that when you are on your home, let's say. I get you. Yeah, I know what you mean.
No, I know. You well, as what matters more is that you really understand it. So that's cool.
Yeah, I can understand that. So during this whole process of character creation, right? Like when you're when you're creating it, tell me what is the thing you enjoy the most about that one? Like the thing you love it when you are creating a character.
Okay, so if I'm creating a character that I've already like that I know I'm gonna play, or creating a character that I'm auditioning for, those are different things.
Yeah,
So when,
it's gonna
but
be sorry.
no, go ahead, go ahead.
Oh yeah. That I was gonna tell you that it's gonna be a character that you already got the role, you're good to go, you're on the stage on or on presenting it, let's say.
Yeah, okay. My favorite part is, so you do all this, or I do all this work. Like I answer these questions, I work on the character, I think about them. But then when stuff comes to me, you know, when I'm not deliberately thinking, but stuff will come to me, while I'm cooking, while I'm reading, when I'm going to bed, when I'm doing other stuff, the character will reveal itself to me. And that's a really beautiful kind of thing to have because it's a surprise and it's a gift. I also find that that happens if I'm there's something called We Audition, which is very useful, and it's a really good tool to run lines. If I've booked something and I want to run my scenes with another person beforehand, you get on there and either like you pay them or you just give them tips. It's actors who do this in their off time. And running the scenes, I always discover new things. Yeah, it's really helpful. And beautiful, the discovery and the surprises, yeah.
And I wonder, like, has it ever happened to you that during, you know, your daily life, parts of your characters in the past come? Has it ever happened that to you that at some point you're like, huh, I just say something, I just act like this character, or I just say something that my character said, and like, has it ever happened that to you?
Well, not particularly like in that way, not from the character's point of view, but I, we all have reels, right? So reels that show parts of our work. And I make my own reel. I love editing and making them good. And there's certain scenes that I've done in projects that are on my reel that I've edited so much that if I ever say anything in the same way or the same turn of phrase or in the same expression as what's on my reel, I'm like, oh, weird. That's strange. Because I'm so there's a really embarrassing laugh that I do in season three of Slasher. That's one of my laughs. I laugh like this. It's embarrassing. And I did it in one of the scenes. And so it's not on my reel because I've cut it out because I'm embarrassed about it. But whenever I'm like, let's say, re-editing the scene, I see the laugh and it's so yesterday, actually, I laughed like that, and I was like, I'm a dork in this way. So that kind of thing happens, but not from the inside. It's more from the outside of what was actually like produced in the show. Or, yeah.
Now, what about, what if I ask you to recommend me five films for this week? Which ones would
Okay.
you,
You want me to
tell me?
things you haven't seen or just anything?
Anything. Let's see if I already see them or not.
Okay. Well, you've seen Phantom Thread?
No, we had one.
Oh my goodness, you haven't seen Phantom Thread. What have you been doing? You must.
Editing,
You.
like editing the whole backlog of videos that I have, but
Yeah, you're like,
I'm
I have a lot to do. So fair.
done.
So Phantom Thread.
Phantom Thread.
Oh, this is a classic, a Cassavetti, like Woman Under the Influence. Have you seen that?
No.
Very good one. That's a really old one. Oh, you know what I watched for the first time, I think last week or the week before, is In the Mood for Love. Have you seen that?
No, dang it.
It's really good. It's like I think it's a Hong Kong movie. It's in Cantonese, but it's so beautiful. That one really threw me and really marked me. Have you seen Barbie yet?
That's the thing. I mean, I've been like planning to watch it, but I
Mm-hmm.
haven't. But it just having like I haven't got the time to it. And the other day, there's a cinema like right next, like super close to like to where I live, and I was like this close to go, but they closed it because it was the premiere of Barbie, and people got crazy. I mean, they start to like really crazy. I mean, I'm talking that they went inside the cinema. They took over like the whole bar.
No.
They took, because like whenever a premiere happened, they will sell like these special cups, like things like that. People went crazy here to for them that they actually stole them, and that was like the most
Oh.
ridiculous thing ever. So they ended up closing it for the day, and I was like, oh crap. And I went, and then a couple of days ago, I was again to actually go seeing it. I was like, yeah, okay, let's see it now. And I went there, but that day was the most horrific rain ever, which where I live never rains, but because it rained a lot, power's out. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. So I don't know if destiny is telling me that I need to wait, or
Yeah.
just but I'm it's definitely on my
On
things.
your
But
list.
I've heard like a really good reviews on that one, like all type of reviews, good ones and bad ones. That's what I do, and I would like to see it for sure.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling's performance is incredible. I would so that one that would be number four on my recommendation list. But that one is great because you're gonna for sure see it. You're gonna for sure watch all of them. I know that.
All right.
The last one would be. Du, du, du. Have you seen The Master? It's with Paul Thomas Anderson. That one's really good because it was when we were looking at those lists before it was on there. That's why I'm thinking about it. It's a really good one. Oh, I really want to see Theater Camp also. Have you seen the preview for that?
I haven't seen that one yet.
That
That's
looks
cool.
really funny. It's just about like a theater camp. It looks really silly, but that would be one I would want to see too.
What about your top 10 films of all time for you? Like your personal taste, like.
Okay, well, Phantom Thread. I love Forrest Gump. It's a perfect movie.
Yes.
Honestly, I would be better at doing top 10 TV shows.
Let's go for TV shows
Switch
then.
it.
Hit it.
The Leftovers. Sopranos, of course.
Mm-hmm.
This is unfair, but season one of Goliath is perfect. It's beautiful. I'd say also these are recent ones that I've really liked, but Fleischman is in Trouble was so good.
Okay.
What else is really, really good? Oh, yeah. Superstore is an excellent comedy, very underrated. Oh, Atlanta, of course. Dave, I'd say season one and two. Although season three is fine, I just really loved season one and two. I really loved The Affair season one. It was so good. And I watched the rest of it, but I loved the beginning of that. What else was unbelievable? So many things have marked me, but I mean, oh yeah, Deadwood, of course. And also, Sex Education. I mean, like, and there's things like The Crown that are wonderful. Like, there's all these beautiful shows, and but those I feel like were really special and marked a first. Yeah.
Have you watched a show called Barry?
Okay, so I really want to like Barry. I've tried watching full seasons. It's just not for me. It doesn't hit. Yeah. But I hear it's
Yeah.
wonderful. People love it, and I'm excited about that.
I mean, I did enjoy the first couple seasons, but like the thing about that show, I mean, at least to me, is that it was really cool, fun, you know? But there was something about it that I just didn't want to watch it anymore. You know, I think
Yeah,
I
you're like,
ended
I'm
up,
going then.
you know, I think like at the last season I didn't watch, I think the last two I didn't watch because, you know, it happens sometimes that I'm watching something and then instantly my head is like, I don't want to watch it anymore. And then I'm just gonna switch and then be like, okay. But it was fun at the beginning. I mean, I love the whole fact about that you wanted to become an actor, which it was like resonating with things that some actors have told me before, you know, with the acting school, the acting coach, the teacher and things like that, the monologues and all of that. So that was kind of fun. But yeah, it was a moment in which I was like, okay. The one that I loved it was Peaky Blinders on Netflix.
The first two seasons of Peaky Blinders are outstanding. Then it gets real, real less
Exact.
good.
That was what I was
But
going to tell you.
the
Exactly.
first couple of seasons, so
And that's a
good.
problem that I hate, like when shows start to do that, like I don't know, like
It's the American way. This is the thing. In the UK or like other European shows or UK shows, they'll stop after a couple seasons. This idea of pushing it until nobody wants it anymore is insane. Like it doesn't make any sense. But Americans do that with all kinds of shows. So you lose the original writers, you lose like I mean, I really love what's it called? What's Sorkin's show? Oh my God, what is it called? What is it called? West Wing. Did you watch West Wing? That's an amazing show, but that's a great example of like I still liked it the whole way through, but if you look at the first few seasons, you can't compare, you know? And it's not true of all shows like The Wire and The Sopranos stayed really strong throughout the whole thing, but this people will just keep like Peaky Blinders should have been done after two seasons.
I can totally agree on that one. Yeah.
And it would be a beautiful thing in our memory, you know?
Yeah, but I hate when they start to do that. Yeah, I even yeah, or like with Game of Thrones. Oh my God, that was the worst. Vikings, The
Vikings
Walking
is too
Dead.
bad. Although Vikings, the first couple seasons, oh my God,
They
that
were
was
the
so.
best. Yes, and the last two I was just like, you know what I ended up doing? I remember that I ended up just skipping everything and we just watched the endings and be like, okay, so here's the ending. Thank you. I'm done. You know, because I hate when they do that they present this incredible show, people love it, you are like so invested to it. But as you mentioned, and I hate when they do that they try to extend it as much as they can into a point that it looks like, okay, what are we gonna do today? I don't know, but we need a closure. So let's kill everyone right now in the most ridiculous way. Call it day of, and we're good to go. And I hate, you know, if you're gonna do that to a character that you invested so much at the beginning, then what's the point of it? You know,
And I mean, I'm okay with them killing off characters, like that's fine. And I'm really like, I started watching Valhalla as well. Like, I'm okay with shows of similar world, but like, let the show end. Let the show
Yes.
end. You know, it's a Leftovers only did three seasons, and that's amazing. And it was such a beautiful show. But again, like, there is an argument to be said of Sopranos. Sopranos only got better. You know what I mean? Like, the Wire, some people love, you know, season five more than anything else. It's like there is an argument for keeping the show on, but I do believe that when it's for the wrong reasons of just like keeping something going, it's not useful.
Yeah, I think what well, at least to me, but one of the best endings of a show of all time is definitely Breaking Bad.
Yeah, it was good.
Like the
I
end.
think to me, Breaking Bad got a lot, got maybe a little too much. It's no, it's a wonderful show. I mean, it was great, but I was like, it the I'm good. I'm okay with it. It didn't rock me in the way that it rocked a lot of people, but that's
Yeah.
about preference. It's not about quality. So yeah,
Yeah,
the
totally.
ending was good, but I was like, yeah, there's been amazing endings of many shows.
In the meantime, what can I say, Rebecca? I mean, we all know you're we all know you're incredible and badass. That's for sure. That's for sure. And keep doing what you do. I love it. I mean, every now and then, whenever I will see like either what's like what you've been up to on your Instagram or things like that, and the fact that you're having fun, you're enjoying life, you're also at the same time working on your craft. That's incredible. I mean, I think that's motivational enough for everyone to be like, you know what? She's killing it out there, so why shouldn't I? You know what I mean?
Thanks so much.
Absolutely. I do want to thank also those who stayed here with us, those who watched this episode. Let me know what you think in the comments below. Let me know what you think about this conversation. If you want to add something else or ask anything, just let me know. Put it there. Also subscribe and leave a like for sure. But most important, in the description below, you're gonna find all of Rebecca's social media. Let's follow her. I mean, as I've said it before, let's keep doing it. Hashtag Team Rebecca. Let's make her viral because she's awesome. She's badass,
Thank you.
and keep killing it. Keep being this incredible of amazing person you always are. And I'll see you in the next one.
Thanks so much. Bye.
All right.